right. Wow. Is that a scratchy throat this morning? Good morning, Republic of Texas Radio. Hey, today's date is, well, July 30th, 2023. You know, or old 23 as we call it. We don't call it that. Anyways, I'm Steve O'Brien, and we have a little special show. It's a show. Definitely. Alan Crutcher is with us, as Dave Kopeck. You remember him from a few hours ago when he did his live show. But this morning, we're just going to kind of do a little bit of a discussion on, I guess it's on energy, power, transportation, the past, the present, the future. I don't know. Let's see where we go. First, let me reach out to Alan. Hey, are you there, Alan? How's your voice? Mine feels a little bit sideways.
Yeah, you're sounding a little Johnny Cash-ish there. Yeah, no, good morning, yeah. RPN, friends and family, Steve, Dave. Just another beautiful day in paradise.
Yes, sir. Dave, radio check. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing this morning? I appreciate the invite on the show.
Yeah, I think it was a good idea, I think. We'll find out. You know, one of the things about, energy, right? We've had over, over 100 years of running on gasoline. You know, the auto manufacturers kind of went with that, and that's not the only reason we use gasoline. But it was something that they sucked out of the ground, or they sucked oil and turned it into gas and then sold it to us, right? We had Tesla that had his tower, the Wardenclyffe Tower. Man, how many shows do we have to mention that, right? That there was free energy available once a long, long time ago, and that all just disappeared. Now it's being covered up by this Elon Musk company called Tesla. Really? They're like, yeah, I know Tesla. You know, do you? Really? You know, a remote control. Which is fascinating when it comes down to the discussion of, well, how we move around, right? You know, Wardenclyffe. What do you, Dave, Tesla, you know, where's your mind with the Tesla scalar technology type stuff? Because I've heard that an awful lot. Me and Alan have talked about it a lot together. But how much Tesla thought have you had? The real Tesla.
Well, you know, he was an amazing, brilliant man. In fact, one of my the books in my collection was one that was like in one of the giveaway piles somewhere. Most people would consider it very dry reading. And it certainly was, I think, to some extent, but it was a collection of his inventions, just hundreds and hundreds of different inventions that he had. But, you know, he really could think outside of the box and started to put us on a path to what would potentially be free energy. There are things out there that we just do not understand yet. And, you know, it's a shame what happened there is all of his work, all of his science scooped right up. And, you know, as we've seen with government before, they usually monopolize these new inventions, new ideas, extract the first use out of it, and we get the dribs and drabs, you know, 10, 20 years later. But, you know, he was on to something. And, you know, to have that much independence in terms of our energy supply is a dangerous thing to people in governments that seek to monopolize control. All right, they couldn't have the two. But yeah, I think that technology, there's a lot there to be still learned, and there's no reason that we should be having these energy discussions and all this peril and fear-mongering that we do. You think back the old telegraph line, all right, the Morse code and the telegraph line, that required some power. And it was long before alternate current came about. And it was, you know, if you go online, you'll hear about what they call them earth batteries, things like that. But they actually extracted energy through copper lines that went along, and they were grounded into the ground. and enough energy was absorbed into the wire to be able to transmit that signal. And it wasn't from generators and motors. It was from what would exist out there, radiating in the atmosphere through the grounding to the earth, supplied enough energy for that technology to work. Now, what could we do in a grander scale if we were to fine-tune our ability to identify and extract that free energy that's out there everywhere?
Yeah, definitely. I haven't heard of the Earth batteries before. I'm going to have to take a look at that one. But that's not to say that I don't understand the concept of it. There's a lot of power concepts I don't understand, but that's probably because, well, that's not my profession or anything like that. What about you, Alan? Have you ever heard of an Earth battery for the telegraph?
Well, basically, if you look at our atmospheric system and the Earth itself as a positive and negative poles on a battery, yes, you know, most of these free energy devices, most of Tesla's stuff, you know, a Tesla coil, you know, the big powerful ones he built, you know, required a very strong Earth ground. You know, you drove a rod into the ground, and there was a connection made between the atmosphere and the Earth, and you ran it through a series of circuits. And there's free energy all around you. You know, that's what Wardenclyffe was. You know, he presented it to J.P. Morgan as, you know, a means of, you know, of telegraphic, you know, transmission. And in the background, he was trying to create a free energy delivery system, you know, that you know, with several points on certain nodes, you know, across the planet. All you had to do was stick your finger up in the air or an antenna up in the air, and, you know, with the right circuitry, and there's... you know, plenty of power available. But like Dave said, the whole thing about this is control. You know, if we had the free energy, the ability to heat and cook and cool ourselves and, you know, create locomotion through, you know, Tesla's AC, you know, motors and everything, we would be a much less controllable population, you know, and a population that's at peace and that can survive and exist on its own has no need of a government, do they?
No, they don't. And we're kind of dealing with this, we're always in an energy crisis on this planet, right? And it's a artificial energy crisis, of course. Gasoline's gone up at least a quarter in the last 5 to 7 days. Oh, why did that happen? Oh, it's because that affects these kind of discussions, right? So we're talking about
all
free
the
energy.
Oil that we produce in this country, a majority of it's being sent overseas, and yet we're still in an energy crisis and having to import oil from other countries. Why is that? I mean, you know,
why is that, Dave?
Am I still here?
No, it's about control. It's about a form of control. And you look, and we've got the sweet crude, too. This stuff with low sulfur comes right from here in the States. We've got large reserves of it. And it appears that our foreign policy has a lot to do with controlling the access to this same material in other countries, a form of artificial scarcity for price control.
It's kind of like why, the gas power car won out over the electric car over 100 years ago. They were producing electric cars, and they were a very, I think they were before gas cars, because they took the original carriages, horse-drawn carriages, and retrofitted those to be, you know, electric buggies. And then they moved on. But gasoline didn't become popular until, all the shortcomings of batteries came to the surface. And we're kind of there today, again, where we face all the problems of electric vehicles. And last week, I don't know, Alan, you probably didn't hear this, but there's a big push for what they call solid-state batteries, undefined term, right? Oh, we're working on solid-state batteries. And the benefits of them are they don't catch fire as much. And I'm like, wonder why you're talking about that. There's a ship off the Dutch coastline that caught on fire about 5-6 days ago, I think it was. And it was a car carrier with 4,000 cars on it. Initially, it was reported there's like 23 electric vehicles on it. And, that was wrong. There was 400 and something. But then multiple car carriers are catching fire. And that's kind of another reason why we're talking about this today. Those electric vehicles use the lithium-ion battery. Now, this lithium, well, and it's cobalt too, right? So we have to mine this stuff. We use slave labor or third world countries to get this. SpaceX is now sourcing it better, really. I don't know if I believe that. but these electric vehicles that we use today are being sold to us as, well, I don't know, what is it, our saviors, right? They're going to save our planet because there's zero emissions. Okay. But they're burning off the coast of the Dutch shoreline. And they're threatening the whole ecosystem, and they're having a hard time putting it out. Imagine that. You have this ever-burning bomb that's called an electric vehicle, 400 of them, you know, throughout the entire car shipping thingy, boat. And it's just burning and burning and burning. So they're trying to sell us a fluffy technology called a solid-state battery, which really doesn't explain what the battery is. Right, Dave? You follow that this last week?
Yeah, I did catch bits and pieces of that, and this is something we should be concerned with. I've seen several videos of these cars and buses when they go up, and it's such a violent reaction. I mean, it's not the same as a gasoline fire, and this is way different. And I tried to imagine, what if their 15-minute cities craziness were real? And there are places now where they're trying to outlaw gas and diesel vehicles inside of the city limits during certain hours or days or what have you, and limit only that area to electric cars. Now, imagine, I go to Boston periodically, and out there, you're typically parking in a parking garage. Can you imagine a parking garage full of electric cars and just one of them goes up? It's going to be like lighting a fuse. Can you imagine the fire and the explosions that would take place and the contamination if an entire parking garage of electric cars goes up? Because I'm not sure that firefighters are even trained and prepared to deal with something like that. You know, one car burns and the battery blows up down at the lower level, and it sends the whole parking garage up in smoke. I don't think your current fire departments are able to even handle something like this. To me, the whole
concept, I can tell you chemically, lithium reacts very violently with water. I don't know if you can even still find lithium batteries. You know, if you chop one of those open and toss it into a vat of water, you're going to have a very violent exothermic reaction. You know, that's why they say, you know, when they go, the fire companies come and try to put it out with water, and it just gets more violent, and it burns and it burns and it burns until all the lithium's gone. But it burns very violently.
Well, it's going to be interesting with the whole, auto industry. Is it the auto industry, or is it the governments that want electric cars? They seem to be promoting this the most. But if this trend keeps up, they won't be able to ship them across the pond. And, shipping companies will turn away from it. The traditional auto carrier packs so many different cars into it, thousands of cars, right? 4,000 cars into one thing.
And Steve, like from what I understand, Steve, real quick, from what I understand, these carriers that have been, you know, that there's been like a couple of them that I've heard of, you know, caught on fire, you know. But you know what? Most of them are packed with Lamborghinis and Ferraris and, all these really, really, I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars of cars on these ships. And, you know, it's not a ship full of Honda Accords and stuff like that. You know, it's these very, very high dollar cars. And for some reason, those seem to be the ones that are catching fire and burning up and sinking.
Yeah, well, oh well, right? So Toyota came out this week, right, as did many other sources, saying that we've got it. We've got the, we're going with the solid-state battery, and it may promise you shorter charging times and long-distance travel, like up to 700-and-something miles on one charge. You're like, where did you pull these numbers? And, wow, that's neat. It's kind of like vaporware. It doesn't really exist, but they used to catch
What about nickel irons batteries, guys? You know, what do they call them? Edison batteries? You know, nickel iron batteries? You know, granted, they're a little bit heavier than a lithium, you know, ion battery.
Quite a bit.
But you know, but they will discharge to an almost completely discharged state, will not ruin the battery, recharge much faster, you know, at a much faster rate, and has a better power distribution over the discharge cycle than any of this crap does. But you can't find, you know, nickel iron batteries anymore.
No, it's not for electric cars, right? You know, it's the iron's too heavy, and it creates, that's another problem with the electric car things. But I think that a lot of people understand the problems with electric cars. I was fascinated with them as a young lad. You know, when I was 14, maybe 15 years old, I had a book on electric cars. I was going to build one. I'm like, okay, I'm going to build one. And then I read the book and I said, oh, well, I guess it's not time. You know, trying to use 1970s, 80s technology to build an electric car. It wasn't quite there yet. You know, GM did that one EV during the last century, right? And it was like around 1990-something, 94, 95, and they created the EV1, which was it ran a lead-acid battery chassis, and by 99, I think, or something like that, they was upgraded to a lithium-ion design. But they wouldn't sell them to people, even though the people liked them. They leased them. And then they withdrew it. What's with that? You know, everybody, it's the thing of conspiracies, I guess. And so, I don't know. Crazy days back then, right?
Well, yeah. One of the things I think escapes a lot of people is when you evaluate this whole push for electric vehicles and to get the internal combustion engines off the streets, is, you know, we know now there is not enough physical material in the earth for these batteries to sustain the fleet of vehicles that are out there now. It's a mathematical impossibility to put everybody in an electric vehicle. So why are they doing this? We know this is a fact. Why are they still pushing it? And you have to make yourself think and consider there may be other trying to do what seems to be impossible. But when you look closer at their policies and what they've determined, they don't want you all driving.
Right.
Everything else that they do in terms of sustainable development and planning, these planners in your communities, is to put you on foot, on bicycle, and public transportation. So we all got to face the fact that their energy policy with these electric vehicles is in very large part motivated by getting you out of your own personal vehicle.
Right.
It has to be. It's part of their plan. They just don't advertise the two together.
It just, you know, it's always like... Well, this failure, the failure to produce electric cars that are viable, is a complete success to the globalists, right? It's like, wow, that's crazy. Hang on, folks. Here's the break. We'll be right back. Republican Texas Radio.
V Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Let's talk Bidenomics. I'm Peter Serafin with another Liberty Minute. President Biden and his team are standing behind their economic record as Biden kicks off his reelection campaign. Let's talk about some numbers. $2.39. That was the price of a gallon of regular gasoline on Inauguration Day 2021. $3.56 was the average price yesterday. That is a $1.17 or 49% increase, which costs the average driver an additional $525 a year. So Bidenomics is not good on gasoline. 2.65% was the rate for a 30-year mortgage when Biden took office. 7.51% is the 30-year fixed rate today. That is a 283% increase that costs home buyers an extra $528 a month on a $100,000 mortgage. And those together, the Biden economy, cost the average home buyer with a car an extra $6,861 a year. So sure, unemployment is down, but Bidenflation is robbing all of us. Remember to listen what a politician doesn't say. Until next time, Sivas Pashem, Parabellum.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Republic of Texas Radio. Hey, good morning, folks. I got Dave Kopeck on the line as well as Alan. We're kind of talking about energy, power. Maybe we're going to get into some of the future. What does the future hold? Is it super fantastic scalar energy with solid-state batteries? No, it probably isn't. It could be, you know, but... I have a feeling we're at a slippery slope, and we were just talking about electric cars and the fallacies, but that's such an easy target to throw darts at. What do you think, Alan? Is it easy to pick on electric cars?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, Dave's up there in the Northeast, and I think I heard that they're having some kind of alert up there for power outages. It's like, imagine if everyone was driving electric cars, you know, no one would be able to go anywhere because the system's already taxed enough with everyone running their air conditioners and I guess their dehumidifiers up where Dave is. Unfortunately, you know, down here we've been having 106 to 109 degree temperatures every day and everything is just crispy crunchy again. Ain't a damn green thing growing anywhere out there. But you know what? One thing that I do have personal experience with, which we can get on after the bottom of the hour, is, you know, a guy named John Bedini. I do have one of his little motors, and you know, talked to the man before. You know, have plans to build, you know, bigger models of his. You know, it's basically a charging system, but it's very unique, and we can talk about that when we have a little more time. But I don't know what Dave. What do you have to say, man?
Mr. Dave.
Well, I think there's a lot of room for innovation across the board. We just got to get government out of the way, because we've definitely adopted a socialist model. And if you look at countries, you know, Venezuela or whatever, where socialism has dominated their culture, you know, they're driving around in 70s and 80s vehicles right now, because innovation is forced, it's driven, and it's all forced by government, not the brilliant minds that exist out there. I've got an example when we got a segment of time to get through it, but a story of a gentleman that I knew personally who was able to drive his vehicle, and he created a duplicate system for his house, and he was off the grid for 4 years with a system the size of a central air conditioner in his basement. The thing ran nearly silent with no emissions, and you know, you can probably guess what happened when he applied for a patent. So yeah. There's technologies out there that can do wonders for us. But again, this is about control. I think what we're going to see out of government and out of our energy future is more fear-mongering. I think there's going to be artificial rolling blackouts to condition us. I think there will be a crisis. They're warming us up to it right now, that China may have malicious software associated with our power grid, water supply, sewage treatment plants, things like this. You know, they got plausible deniability. They can crash the house down and just blame China and throw entire segments of the nation or the whole nation into an authentic energy crisis. All engineered and created, of course, but, you know, that's where we are right now. I don't think they're going to give up willingly. So those inventors out there, stop filing for patents, create your invention, and then replicate it, put it out, make it, get it out there so, it, you know, the genie's out of the bottle.
Well, one person tried that, you know, back in the 90s, early 2000, this guy named Joe out in Australia, he created the Joe cell, and he didn't want to patent it because he thought that was as soon as he patented it, he believed he wasn't going to get a patent, and the second thing was he believed he was going to get dead.
Yeah.
And so he put it out there, and it's called the Joe cell, and it was very interesting. You know, I looked at it, I was about to create it, and I've said this before, you know, I was building up all the parts and pieces to do it back in 2008, I think it was, 2009, maybe, yep. When gasoline was $5 a gallon. Now, that hurt. That really hurt, that price. And the price of diesel was, well, closer to gas back then. Now it's like diesel's, who cares what it is. But anyways, I was inspired to try to do something. And, I think that's what it really takes, because when I was first trying to build it, I met Alan, and Alan's all, I was thinking about building something similar. And so did a couple other people in the Fredericksburg community. But that all just dropped like a bad habit, and the price of gas when it went to, I think it went down to like $1.25 or something, Alan, in 2008. Yeah. You remember that? That was such
a
steep
kind of on
dive.
This subject, Steve. Kind of on this subject, Steve. You know, I know at some point you want to talk about wood gasifier systems. You know, FEMA actually put out, you know, on how to build and how to, you know, use a wood gasifier system. This was back when the government still gave us the perception that they cared something about us, and how you could produce, you could hook it up to a very simple, you know, carbureted motor, and it, you know, using pyrolyzed wood chips, you could create a gas that would burn in an internal combustion engine, and you could run a generator, you could run a farm machine, you know, a thresher or something like that with it, and you know, all that's been taken away from us, kind of like the hydraulic ram pump, 200-plus-year-old technology. Very freaking simple. If you have a flow of water, you can pump water anywhere you want to with just the force of water.
Right? You know, it's all the old stuff that, will it ever be reinvented, reused? You know, it keeps you free. That's one of the
And I can tell you a hydraulic ram pump does work, and they ain't real hard to make, because I've got one down at my pond.
Well, okay. After the bottom of the hour break, we'll come back with the Bedini motor or, you know, the futuristic stuff. And then we'll go all old school. Hang on, folks. We'll be right back with Bubba the Texas Radio.
Hope our best intentions. I was trying to pay attention. It's like you said. It's in my head. I can't run circles till the morning comes. When it does, I know it's on. It's you and I. Don't miss it for the sun.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
This is Elizabeth McCabe, a.k.a. Lucky One of Truth Frequency News. I wanted to tell you all about Extendivite from HeartDrop.com. Y'all know I check everything before I air it. When I heard about Extendivite on TFR, I went to HeartDrop.com and started my research. It's got cayenne. That's good for blood and circulation. It stimulates the blood flow. It's got garlic, which fights bacteria like antibiotics, and it lowers the cholesterol and blood pressure. It also has milk thistle, which is the best detox for liver. I couldn't wait to try it out, and I'm glad I did 4 months ago. And here's obvious results. My hands and feet don't get cold anymore. The varicose veins have faded too. My wrists don't hurt after typing all day. Now, I tell you all this because it's true and I want you to really live life. Try Extendivite. Go to heartdrop.com and order it.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop and lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop and lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Ease-Off.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
All right. Oh, goodness. There goes the voice again. Hey, you're listening to the Republic of Texas radio show. Dave Kopex is with us. This is a big segment, and we're talking about power and energy and things like that. And this is a good time to sit there and tell you about the woo-woo future of the reality of power. You know, they're keeping the good stuff from us. You know, Dave, you have an anecdotal, I guess it is, a perspective on that, really pretty close to the subject. Why don't you tell us a little bit about living off-grid with your own power?
Yeah, I've got a couple of things. One, the wood gas, you mentioned that, and that's something
I like that
I'm certainly
one.
Going to incorporate. But I have another experience that I like to share at some point during the show of an individual who has created a motor.
Yeah, why don't you do that? Do that one right now.
Share it now. Yeah.
I think we might have lost him. Dun dun dun.
Well, real quick, then I'll talk about my Bedini experience. You know, okay. There was a guy named John Bedini that created this charging system, and it uses what's called a monopole motor. You know, it doesn't have a stator and a rotor and commutators and everything. You know, with sparks, it's kind of like your ceiling fans, you know, or a brushless motor. You know, there's no friction involved. You know, it's all electronic the way it switches, but you know, it used bifiller wound coils, which is a specific way that you double the wire over and wind it into a coil. And every time the circuit's lost, that back EMF signal, instead of going to waste and creating heat like most electric motors do, you know, it used that as part of the charging system. It created and collected that back EMF signal every time the gap was broken. And I ordered one of his kits, and this little motor sat there, and it was all in pieces. You know, you had to put it together. He gave you instructions on, he gave you the circuit board and the bus bar and everything, and you had to know enough, you know, electronics and, you know, to be able to solder all these, you know, the power transistors and the diodes and the resistors and, you know, everything else into this system. But once you got it, man, this little thing would sit there and spin at like 10,000 RPM. And the only heat created was in the bearing surfaces, where on the shaft that it spun on. You know, the coils themselves did not get hot. Just an amazing little thing. And yes, it did have a COP, which is a coefficient of production, over 1. Even with my primitive instruments, I could hook it up to a battery. You had to have a battery to run it. But it charged more into the charging battery than it used from the battery that was operating it. Even with my primitive, I didn't have oscilloscopes and all this other crap, you know, just some multimeters and various other things. And I know a little bit about electronics, and I could tell that it actually produced more energy than it used from the battery, you know, that was running the system. So yes, yeah. Is this real? You know, I can tell you it's real. You know, and the last time I talked to him, I said, John, I said, how is it that you're not, you know, bought out or dead? And he goes, well, from everything I can tell, Alan, it's because I don't sell complete units. You have to have some kind of knowledge. You know, I send you all the pieces and the instructions on how to build it. And, you know, unfortunately, it wasn't too much longer after that John Bedini left this planet. But
Is my audio back?
You're back. I hear you now.
Okay. I'm sorry about that. I'm not sure what happened there. But... Yeah, what I started to say is we as individuals, all right, I'm talking about homeowners and families here, we got to look at piecemealing together what we need and maybe even spreading out because we got very pampered and used to, you know, that wire coming to our house, flipping a switch and things just happening, whether it was a low-energy light bulb or a high-energy clothes dryer. It just started working for us. We may have to, really think about where our power needs are. And the solution, whether it's a massive nationwide solution or a solution just in your own home, your own homestead, we've got to look at diversifying where our energy comes from. For example, hot water. We like to think that we can just go in, turn the knob, and water comes out, and it's the perfect temperature. Well, that's all well and good when energy is flowing nicely, but that's not the only way to get hot water, is it? You know, do we need electricity for that? Because I was on my way for my camp up north. I had set myself up. This is before we had a well, before we had power, before we had anything. We were bringing in our water, and I was putting it in 50-gallon barrels. I was getting an air compressor, putting a few pounds of pressure to it, and I could take a nice hot shower. All right. Now, you got to mix things like solar, wind. You know, wind will pump water. Think of the old windmills that used to distribute agricultural water all over the place. Well, wind will pump water from your well to your house. Solar can heat it up at least to a certain temperature. And I know during, the two or three seasons of nice weather up here, you can heat hot water inside an insulated box with two sliding glass doors and put in some water pipe, black ABS pipe coiled in there, and it will heat up water to the point that you've got to mix it with cold water. It's too hot to shower in. So when energy becomes scarce, we're all going to become energy conscious. We're going to be looking for things, and you should be preparing now for low energy light bulbs. You know, do you want a bunch of 100 watt old-fashioned incandescent bulbs that take 100 watts of power to run? Or do you want something that only takes 4 or 8 watts and provides the same light? So there's things that we can do in that respect to lessen our energy intake in absolute units of energy. But there's always going to be the need for those high energy demand things, things that run motors. And that's where, I'm going to use a combination of wind, solar, you name it. But I'm going to have wood gas to be able to drive a generator that will in turn drive all of those high energy things, whether it's tools, that type of stuff. We're going to have to reschedule when we, have high demand things that require a lot of energy. That's when you're going to fire up the gasifier. When you don't,
unfortunately, Dave, a gasifier requires some way to reduce the wood to like chips or pulp of some type. You can't just like go out and cut logs and toss them into the gasifier and it works. You know, right. It has to be reduced to a certain amount. You know, and that's the one thing that I saw in that whole wood gasifier system that was kind of the catch. You know, it's like you've got to have a way to reduce the wood to a small enough, particulate matter that you could put it in your pyrolyzer and it would actually, function right.
Sure. There's some maintenance to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're a little ahead of ourselves on the gasifier conversation because most of the people out there in RBN land don't understand what a gasifier is. I guess if I were to try to describe it, it's a technology that was around since World War One. I think it was maybe even older than that. And what you do is you take like a 55-gallon drum, a metal drum, like they use to, hold oil and all sorts of chemicals, whatever. And in the bottom, there's a colander. And it sits there above a little pipe that goes out and attaches to your engine, your intake manifold, actually. It would probably go over there. And a little butterfly valve. And you take off the carburetor or fuel injection or whatever you had, and you just have this little butterfly. And when you crank the engine over, the suction from the engine actually draws gas out of the wood. Now, you have a little pilot light on the inside, so before you drive your little gasifier rig, you have to open a little door and put a little flame in there, and that heats the wood. And once that gets a nice little bed of coals, the engine itself will suck the gas from the wood. And Alan was just talking about one of the challenges. And Dave, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that matter. Alan and I have talked about building a gasifier, quite a few times. And then we always get stuck with the wood chip part. And maybe somebody
I've got the perfect engine, Steve. I've got a 1948 8N tractor that has the most. It's the most simple, basic internal combustion engine. It's like a frickin' Model T, it's got a motor, spark plugs, and a carburetor.
Mm-hmm. But the first thing you need to do before you start building this thing is have a wood chip, right? And so, what do? My thought, Dave, was I'd buy a commercial wood chipper and start there. What are you thinking?
I mean, you certainly could, because you could run that to create more fuel. But, to build up to that, let's say you couldn't afford a wood chipper. You go out and everyone's cut firewood before. Or you cut it in thinner slivers and split it into blocks. You don't have to have wood chips. Wood chips will work. If you get a good hardwood wood chip pile that's nice and dry, it will work. But I've also seen, there's a few varieties of wood gas fires and how they're loaded in the hoppers and the retort. But yeah, little blocks of hardwood work very well too. But the idea, the premise behind it is that you have junk fuel wood that you burn openly with oxygen that creates the heat. And as you approach 700 to 800 degrees and higher, you have a secondary container, another barrel, if you will. You said a 50-gallon barrel, and many have been built out of 50-gallon barrels. Inside that 50-gallon barrel might be a 30-gallon container, whether it's a propane tank or whatever, another steel tank. And that is where the actual fuel wood goes. And what you're doing is driving off the gases, all right, through the heat of the external fire, is driving those flammable gases, they call it syngas, out of your blocks of wood in the absence of oxygen. It doesn't actually burn the wood. It drives out the volatiles, which you capture, through a filter system, through some condenser pipes, and then at the very end, the trick is to figure out what is that right ratio of air, because it comes out so rich, you got to mix air with it to get your motors to run properly. Now, up here in the town that I'm at in New Hampshire, there's a guy down the road, got a beautiful greenhouse too, but I bump into him quite often driving around in his pickup truck on wood gas. He goes out, runs all his errands on the weekend, tag sailing, whatever, driving around with a couple of little barrels in the back. He used the rails along the side of his pickup truck bed. They look like just standard rails, but those are his condenser pipes. And he can go anywhere. As long as he's got a load of wood, he can drive that truck just like anything else. And you can take that same apparatus. And what I was going to try to be set up to do is have a similar setup in an actual pickup truck that I could just drive over to where my home is, disconnect my truck, connect it up to my home generator, and run whatever I need. But again,
Dave, there are updraft and downdraft models. You know, some say that one's more efficient than the other. You know, there's different ways to construct this. But, you know, the main thing that what Dave just said is that it does not actually burn the wood. There's not like a flame in there. It pyrolyzes it, which basically it burns it. Basically, in the lack of oxygen, it just glows and coals, and all the gases are released from what's inside the wood. Instead of burning in these big, beautiful campfire flames, it just burns, and all the gases are released. And then the gases, you run through a filter, you'll filter out all the crap in it, and you get something that an internal combustion engine can use to operate. It has to be an old engine. It can't be like a fuel injection or a throttle body engine or anything. It has to be an old engine that you can adjust the air fuel mixture on. You know, a carbureted engine.
I'm not sure about that. There's ways of dealing with it, and you don't. The carburetor comes out when you install a gas fire. You just use the throttle body. I'm sorry, intake manifold. And so you build your own throttle body, and you have to deal with the ratio of gas to air, like Dave says, on your own. But it's like purely mechanical and correct me if I'm wrong there, Dave, you know, because an old or a new engine has like a port injection. You probably don't want to have modify a vehicle that has like fuel injectors that go directly into the cylinder head. Right.
Well, that, and there's so many sensors on a lot of these new vehicles that you would be throwing codes left and right, probably.
Thing is, you know, screw the codes. You know, it's like you cut all those wires, right? Those are irrelevant. But you still need a spark plug, right? And the newer cars are a pain in the butt to get spark. You know, the old-fashioned ones with an old distributor. Right, an electronic ignition distributor
with points in a condenser.
Points is better, right? So
now, I've seen little cars with the wood gasifier seat belted into the passenger seat, and a hose run through the glove box to the motor. So there's all kinds of ways that you can get creative with this. And another good thing you guys would appreciate is that the waste, the byproduct of a wood gasifier on one side, when you decondense it and take some of the liquids out of it before it goes into your motor, that's all captured. And that creosote, that can be used as a different type of fuel. It can be used to treat your fence posts and things like that for rot resistance. And you also have what's called biochar. That's essentially what's left over in the retort. Yep. Once you've driven off all of the volatile organics, you are left with almost pure carbon. And for those that are big into gardening, they know biochar. Once you charge that with nutrients, man, that is some great stuff to really increase your yield in your gardening efforts too. So there's really, from an environmental point of view, as an environmentalist, what a wonderful thing this is, because there's very little smoke that's contributed to the atmosphere. All of your byproducts are usable. It's hard to find a downside, but it's going to be a bit of an inconvenience for some people. People don't like to work for their, energy, work for anything. We've gotten very soft. There is some maintenance to it. You do have to figure out, you got to do a little tweaking. If you pull a wood gasifier that will run your truck, and that's one of the hardest things to do, because it's got a very large range of what you're asking that motor to do. Like with a generator, you have a start speed and a run speed. With your vehicle, you're on a hill going up, you're on a hill going down, you're on a flataway, you got a load, you don't have a load. There's a lot of different demands, and to keep a vehicle going is probably the most challenging. To get a generator to run is pretty darn easy, relatively speaking, but it's a technology.
Hey, Dave, kind of on this subject, Dave, I got plans, this has been 18 years ago, on how to build a used oil burner. It uses old gas-fired water tank, and you have a drip feed system with copper pipes, it winds around the X. And once you get this thing running, it sounds like a little jet engine in there. And the smoke coming out the stack, you can't even see it once you get it running right. It's not like, everyone thinks, burning used motor oil, it's just going to be this black, noxious smoke. But no, the way this system runs, it heats the oil up, and then it drops down onto a pan, and it flash fires, and it burns. And it's basically, I wouldn't want to be up there, breathing the exhaust. But it's not this black, noxious crap coming out. And it gets very hot. It sounds like a little jet engine when it's running.
One of my old mechanics, we've got a 3-bay garage, that he uses the waste oil from, projects. And he heats his whole place. It is very clean. Yeah. And what they're doing is, they got smart. And they realized that these fuels actually burn much more efficient, more quickly when they're heated up. So in those copper feed lines, it drips into what's basically a big crucible, where the fire actually burns. Is they're making that copper line, rather than a straight beeline right from a holding tank into the crucible, they're right. making like an impinger coil, so that it's being heated just enough before it goes into and drips into the crucible, that it's a much more efficient burn. So
my burner plate is an 8-inch cast iron skillet turned upside down that I drilled holes in, and beneath that you have a little bed of like lava rock or something like that, just to start and heat it all up. And once you get it going, it sounds like a jet engine. It sits there and it just drip, and once you get it going, it's like you can't even see the smoke coming out of the chimney.
Yeah,
it's amazing. I just think that the average tree hugger would hate this conversation.
talking about what are you going to do? Recycle it, put it in a landfill, dump it on your land, or burn it? And I don't know.
The tree hugger type shouldn't be threatened with this. because our forests right now, oddly enough, are we are producing the highest quality and quantity of wood in this country right now than we have in over 100 years. And what's starting to happen is because of environmental policy and that hands-off by humans attitude, is we're losing the quality part really quick as invasives, vines. There's vine species that'll drag an adult tree right to the ground and kill it. And if we're out there actively culling our forest and our properties for the fuel wood to provide energy for ourselves, decentralize the energy, we're going to wind up with even healthier forests. I have no will. I got 24 acres up here in New Hampshire. I can go out and without cutting a single tree down, provide enough firewood to heat ourselves here and extra. I sell a little bit just to pay the taxes. But, you know, maybe I'll want to recommit some to a wood gasifier without killing a single tree. And if I do, I'm not going to go after a perfectly nice-looking specimen tree. I'm going to go after one that's diseased or deformed. I'm going to go after one that's choking out another tree. And I'm going to have, by the time I leave this earth, this tree stand will be healthier because of my aggressive use of the forestry products.
So, hell, Dave, on my property, if I went out and cut all the trees that have died or are dying or almost dead or already down, I could heat the whole city of Fredericksburg for a winter, no problem. You know, if everyone had, you know, had gas, you know, had wood burning systems.
Yeah.
Out here in the hill country in Fredericksburg, we have piles of trees that are burned up after it rains. Everybody's like, "Well, here's the burn pile." Being from a city type environment, I wasn't quite used to these things called burn piles. Huge, you know, 12, 15, 20 feet tall, you know, just trees that have died. And then more trees come up, and it's like a cycle, I guess. So it's out there. But logic, Dave, that doesn't matter to tree huggers. They just want to, you know, hug the tree and the oil.
I remember Yul Gibbons. Yul Gibbons said, all you need to do to survive is go out and gnaw on a tree, you know, just to eat some tree bark. You know, that was Yul Gibbons back in the day. But, yeah.
Yeah, and he wasn't too far off either. There's more things out there that we can eat than there are things that we can't. You know,
given the right environment, yes. Like it is right here in Texas now, there is nothing green going on here. In fact, the freaking cactus are starting to die again. It's so hot and dry. I mean, it's crazy. You know, we go from one extreme to the next. You know, we've got so much fuel on the ground right here. I'm surprised. Steve, has there been a lot of, you know, grass and wildfires, you know, around here lately? I haven't kept up that much, but, you know, we had a very wet spring and everything was green and lush out here, and now we've had 106 to 109 degree temperatures for like 3 weeks every day, and I can walk out there and it's like walking on Rice Krispies again. There's not a freaking green thing growing anywhere out here.
Everybody loves that fear right now. But hey, hang on, that's the music. We'll be right back. Republic of Texas Radio.
With the spirit world. Learned as a community and equally taught every boy and girl. The tree of life is us, my friends.
Standing 6'4", weighing 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be a bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.